The Big Wake Up by Mark Coggins is what you hope every private eye novel will be, says Edgar Award-winning author Megan Abbott. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com. Chapter 9. Toss Job. If Melina was surprised to get a phone call from me so soon after our last meeting, she hid it well. I gave her the good news about finding Maria's grave and the burial transit permit, and only hinted at other complications, suggesting that an opportunity to check out Araceli's apartment might be helpful.
"But why, August?"
she asked.
"Most everything is already packed in boxes, and I do not understand what Araceli could have to do with the grave of my aunt."
"That's exactly what I hope to find out. And afterwards, I'm buying dinner, if you're free."
"I am having my tires rotated."
"What?" she laughed.
"That is a line from a television show in Argentina. The star is a pretty girl who gets many offers from men, and she always gives silly excuses for not accepting. Of course, I will have dinner with you. I will meet you at Araceli's."
The apartment was on Pine Street between Mason and Taylor. It was only a block and a half from the cable car line on Powell, which explained Araceli's unfortunate decision to ride the car home from the laundromat. The building was a handsome yellow brick Victorian with bay windows and a lot of Rococo scroll work, as well as some fresh, but not so Rococo, graffiti on one of the garage doors. Melina was waiting for me in the lobby, just inside the door. When she caught sight of me through the glass, she flashed another one of her soul-dissolving smiles. She let me in and I felt a loopy grin come over my own features. I had known I was in trouble when I found myself going by my own place to exchange my shirt and tie before coming, but I didn't want to come off like a moonstruck adolescent.
"So, Araceli's apartment?"
she said. "Yes."
"It is on the third floor, or the fourth, as you would call it. But I still do not understand why you want to see it."
The synapses in my temporal lobes began firing again, and I managed to give an account of my adventures with the guys in the Porsche. While she digested the news, I steered her by the elbow to the elevator at the back of the lobby.
"You think this Ken person was seeing my sister?"
she asked as the palsied door lurched open. I led her inside and punched the button for the fourth floor. He definitely looked like a boss-wearing type. And he was big enough.
"But why would he be concerned about my aunt's grave?"
"I don't know. Maybe your sister told him about your father's plan to move Maria back to Argentina. Maybe he's interfering to even the score in Araceli's battle with him. I'm hoping something in the apartment will give us a clue."
"Araceli only wanted my father to stop interfering in her life. She would not have interfered in his, or encouraged anyone else to. And the only thing I found before was the suit. I would not have insisted you were seeing her if I had found other evidence. That is the way a detective would say it, yes?"
She smiled at me again, and that coupled with a contact high I was getting from her perfume, and the real or imagined sense that I could feel her body heat radiating across to me in the enclosed space, threatened to send me into crush on the cheerleader mode again. The creaky elevator saved me by lurching open to a halt. "Evidence is the right term," I said as the door stuttered open. "But when it comes to finding it, you need an expert like me."
"Of course, I should have known."
She led me down a short hall and unlocked the second door we came to, number 403. Inside was a studio apartment with cherry custard walls, oak wood floors, baseboards and wainscoting, and an irregular checkerboard of windows. One was a stained glass number with an ivy and calla lily pattern that spanned the length of the back wall. Above it was a shelf with a dozen or more colored glass bottles and a cookie jar in the shape of a frog. The rest of the furnishings were more pedestrian. Clunky IKEA furniture with shiny ashwood veneers, including a bed, a dresser, and a U-shaped table with two uncomfortable-looking chairs. Scattered among the furniture were a number of cardboard boxes, already labeled and taped shut. There was a tiny kitchen with a four-burner stove off one side of the main room, and an even smaller bathroom painted half neon lime and half lemon yellow off the other. I walked up to one of the boxes. A Spanish word I didn't recognize was written on the top. "What's inside?" I asked.
"That has clothing."
She pointed to another box.
"And that one shoes. There is one box with books and another with photographs and paintings. I donated most everything else, but I could not bear to give up everything of hers, even if I never open the boxes once I get home."
It dawned on me that forcing her to paw through the apartment was pretty damn insensitive. I softened my voice. "I understand. The photographs you mentioned, I gather there weren't any pictures of young men."
"No, they were photographs she had hung on the wall. Pictures of Buenos Aires and things like that."
"How about a computer or a cell phone?" She brought her hand to her mouth.
"I am sorry, August. I got rid of those. I did not think to examine them. The computer was for school, and the phone, it was covered in her blood. I could not keep it."
"Jesus, what an idiot." "Of course," I said. "Please forget I brought it up. I'm afraid you're right. I'm not going to find anything you didn't, but I'd like to make a quick pass."
"Yes, please. As you say, you are the expert."
She managed a faint smile. "Some expert. Do you mind if I open the box with the books? I don't need to look at anything else you've packed, but maybe she left something between one of the pages."
"Of course."
Melina sat down in one of the IKEA chairs while I broke the tape on the box marked Libros and checked out the contents. A lot of the books had to do with her courses in pharmacology, and those that didn't looked to be Spanish language novels or memoirs. It took me a good half hour to sort through them all, and the only thing I found between all the pages was a takeout menu from a Chinese restaurant down the street. I packed them up again, resealed the box, and moved on to the kitchen. There was nothing inside the cabinets, and the stove and the icebox were completely empty. I even checked the ice trays. I don't know what I was expecting to find, a microdot maybe, but they only had frozen water. I moved to the main room and shifted through all the drawers in the dresser, even going so far as to take them out to see if there was anything taped underneath. There wasn't. There wasn't anything between the mattress and the box spring either, or in the small closet. I went to the bathroom next and checked the medicine cabinet, the vanity, and even took the lid off the toilet tank. Triple goose egg. I'd seen a movie once where the protagonist hid something in the ductwork of his hotel room, so I scanned the studio for vents, and then realized that all the heat came from radiators. I walked back into the middle of the main room with my hands laced on top of my head, and tried to think of some face-saving way to admit I was giving up. Nothing face-saving came to mind, but my eyes wandered over to the line of bottles and ceramics on the shelf above the stained glass window. I looked back at Melina, who was watching me intently. "Just curious, why didn't you pack or donate the stuff on the shelf?"
"I was going to, but the owner told me that it belonged to the flat. She said she picked the colors to match the window."
I snagged the other chair from the table and set it underneath the shelf. I stepped on the seat and reached up to take down the frog-shaped cookie jar. Something soft thudded inside that didn't sound the least little bit like cookies. I grinned. Melina jumped up and came to stand beside me. I lifted the frog's head off and took out a notebook or journal that was rubber-banded together with a clutch of envelopes. The notebook turned out to be a photo book with nothing but pictures of Araceli, my ball-bruising friend Ken, or both together in various locales throughout the Bay Area. The envelopes contained cards or short letters addressed to Araceli that were all written in Spanish in a masculine hand. Melina took out one of the cards and pointed at the name that was signed inside.
"It seems you need to call Ken by a different name, Maximo."
"Then I know his last name."
"What?"
"Asjolio. Maximo Asjolio." You have been listening to The Big Wake Up, a book Publishers Weekly described as outstanding in a starred review. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com.